Good evening, everyone. So glad that everybody's glad to see everyone and visiting, but it is 7 o'clock, so we'll get started with our class. On the back podium, there's two sets of material. One is for just the night tonight, so if you're not committed to Ecclesiastes and just want the lesson for tonight, you can grab that. The other one's the full booklet that has the syllabus on top. For those that we ran out last week, we have more copies of those in the back. Feel free to grab those. If you haven't already, we'll be in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 tonight. So go ahead and open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and that's where we'll begin in just a moment. Before we get started, let's just bow together and offer a prayer together. All right, if you Ecclesiastes chapter 2, but before we jump in, let's do a quick refresher from last week, and I'll just flip back to the very beginning of the book. And we talked about last week the book Ecclesiastes and who the writer was. Who was the writer of Ecclesiastes? Solomon. When did we believe Solomon wrote this book in his life? What part of his life? Probably near the end is what we're thinking. We're going to kind of go with that theory. It's not explicitly stated in the scripture, but we made points last week on that. What's the word Ecclesiastes mean? The preacher, the one that calls together a group and is the preacher, the one that stands before them. And then on verse 1, 2, and 3 really lays out the book of Ecclesiastes, the scope, the purpose. If we go straight to verse 3 here on the board, it says, "What advantage does man have in all the work in which he does under the sun?" And that is the scope of this, is under the sun. Life without God in the picture. What's life like on the earth? And he says, what advantage does man have? And so that's going to be the ultimate question. We're really going to dig deep into that in chapter 2 tonight. And what's the answer that he says in verse 2 right out the gate? What advantage does man have? What is it? Says it four times, right? Five times. It's vanity. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. We talked about how later in chapter 1, he talks about this idea of striving for the wind, and what that was a great definition of what vanity really is that someone striving for the wind, trying to capture that wind. And then at the end of chapter 1, the last several verses, we looked at Solomon, and he went and he looked and tried to figure out and go on this great experiment, if you will. And he first started with wisdom. And we know that at the beginning of Solomon's reign, as king, he asked God for wisdom. And that he explored that through the end of this chapter. And then now in chapter 2 tonight, which I hope you've had a chance to read it, we will read these sections together, he's going to continue that exploration. But the very first here in the first 11 verses of chapter 2, he is trying to figure out if there's any advantage to man under the sun in pleasure and possessions. And so let's read the first 11 verses together. I'm going to read it from my Bible, which is the New American Standard. On the board is the ESV. So if there's any differences, that's what it is. So let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11 together. Solomon writes, "I said to myself, 'Come now, I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself,' and behold, it too was futility. I said, 'Of laughter, it is madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish?' I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly until I could see what was good there, what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. I enlarged my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself, and I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers and the pleasure of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I exerted, and behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun." So now that you're thoroughly discouraged from that reading, let's jump into what Solomon means. You can kind of see, and I told you about the markings that you have in your material that's on the board ahead of you. So it's going to jump out of you. What jumps off the page in these first 11 verses that Solomon's using? What is he using a lot of? Say it again. My, myself, and I. I think it's like 16 times he either references I, my, myself. I have 8 of those, I think, when I have my and myself show up in this reading about that. So what's the problem with that? Say it again. He was his own God, right? So go back to the very beginning when we kind of think about that, looking at that overall picture. He says, very beginning, I said to myself. So we talk about talking to ourselves. Solomon did this 3,000 years ago. He sets out on this journey and he says, now I want to test with pleasure. And what does he say right off the bat? This idea of pleasure. He said it was what? Futility. Now we can kind of take a step back and we understand the scope of this is under the sun. But when we look at society, we look at the world, is this still taking place today? I would dare say that most people in Auburn, Alabama are after this pursuit. And you know what? Sometimes it comes after us too. So let's don't separate us from this equation. That we are saying, how can I enjoy myself? You know, that's probably a weakness of us all. I'd say myself included, that I kind of want things to be easy. I want things to be pleasurable. And Solomon says, I'm going to go on this journey to see how I can go about doing that. So what did he do? What did he do right off the bat there in 2 and 3? What's the first thing he did in verse 2? He explored what? Laughter, comedy. You know? He said he wanted to laugh. What did he say right off the bat? It's madness and a pleasure. What does it accomplish? And so the idea of this, and I use this as an example, and maybe we should use this a little later when we have this discussion, but I think right here we can jump into it. All of us experienced this really recently, Thanksgiving dinner, right? You eat Thanksgiving dinner about 12, and when you get done eating, you think you may never want to eat again until what? About 6 o'clock, right? You got to go back. And so there's this idea, we can kind of look at that example and think, yes, I've fulfilled this great pleasure of having this feast of food. And now Solomon's going on this in a different, he's going to check pleasure through, to start with laughter and comedy. And then he becomes a guy I really like here in this next section. What does he do? He goes and buys property. He's a real estate agent's dream and a developer. So what does he do? He says, I go and I enlarge my works. He says, it is there in verse 4, I enlarge my works. I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks, and I planted them all kind of fruit trees. And so what does he do now? He goes and says, I'm going to try to see if having houses, having property, making the gardens pretty. You ever been to Biltmore, go to the botanical gardens? We like landscaping, right, John? We want good landscaping. And so he goes and he says, is that going to give me pleasure? And I ask you this question right here. Did Solomon enjoy these things? He did. I see a lot of head shaking. He did. But what does he say about them ultimately? They're what? Say it again. Vanity, futility, right? It's because it has nothing long-lasting here. And so he goes in verse 7, he says, I bought male and female slaves, homeborn slaves, I had flocks, I had herds. So he becomes a farmer. He gets all these animals. And then he goes on and says in verse 7 that he said, I have possessions greater than all who ever preceded me in Jerusalem. And we made this point last week on this exercise that Solomon goes through. He was in position to do this better than anyone ever. Because he, number one, had wisdom. Number two, he had riches. His time as a king was a time of peace, so he wasn't out at war. So he spent that time building this. If we go back and look in scriptures, we know that building his house actually took longer than it did building the temple. And so we see that he put a lot of effort in saying, is there any value in being able to do this? And we know that that was not the case. So then in verse 8, he collected silver, gold, treasures. He had female singers. If Adele was there, he had her in his courts to sing to him whenever he wanted, right? Whenever he wanted a live concert, he had it. And then it says he had pleasures of men, many concubines. Remember, Solomon had, was it 700 wives and 300 concubines? Or I have that number backwards? I think that's right. What's the problem when you have 1,000 wives? I heard a lot of chuckles, but seriously, what's the problem when you have 1,000 wives? You don't have one wife is what I've put in my notes. you have 1,000. And so we see here, the point I believe he's making here is that that would seem like that's going to be something pleasurable and good. But we understand that some of the last verses we have about Solomon tells us what about his wives? They pulled him away. And that it was the gods of his wives that pulled him away. And ultimately, that was a downfall to Solomon in his life. And so we see that he explored all of these things. And then what I love what he does in verse 9, 10, and 11 is he kind of completes this. He said, I became great, increased more than all in Jerusalem, and my wisdom stood by me. We know, I believe this verse gives a lot of credence to Solomon as the writer because he's in Jerusalem. He's expanded the kingdom. Remember, this is the fulfillment of the land promise to Abraham is fulfilled during the time of Solomon. And so he has expanded the kingdom. He's at a time of peace. He's expanded all these things. His wisdom was with him. In verse 10, he says this, all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. Ask you this question, was that good? Anybody, I see some head shaking. No, does anybody want to say that was good? No? Stacy, go ahead. You're about to say.
It. For him, no.
Yeah.
For us, yes.
Thank you.
Because I think you kind of pointed on this last week was if there was ever anyone at any point in time who could determine whether things of this world would give us pleasure, it was Solomon.
Yes.
And then the way he even did it, he did it with his wisdom to test all of these things to find out if anything under the sun can give us pleasure.
That's right.
And he says, it's not. And I did it in a way that I'm going to test it with my wisdom, and it still doesn't work. It's still good.
Absolutely. I hope y'all could hear Stacy. And I said, as he said, for Solomon, the answer is no, absolutely. His life, he had a lot of heartache through that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about this later in this chapter, some things that came after him. But for us, Solomon going through this experiment, we have to learn from his experience. And I think that's the goal of this class is to look at what Solomon did. And something Stacy said, and I want to go back to this in verse 3 because I kind of blew over this. Verse 3, he says, I explore with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely. Now, right on the surface, that sounds like that just can't happen, right? What's Solomon saying here about the exploration of wine and his wisdom? What was he trying to do here? Was he going to get drunk? No, he wasn't, right? What was he doing? What would we call what he did? He was going to have a what kind of drink? A social drink. And he said, I'm going to explore this to see, and in that, I'm going to keep my mind about me. God, I'm going to try to have my wisdom guide me wisely. Do y'all agree with that's what he's saying here? It seems in verse 3. But what he says here, and he wanted to take hold of folly, but he says there that these things were just futility, and he was not able to do that. Back to some of the things that Stacy was pointing there. Because at the very end of this, in verse 11, when he kind of finishes this section, he says, thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done and the labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity, striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. And so we see all those key things that we talk about from the very beginning. Solomon takes this exploration of pleasure, this exploration of possessions, all the things that so many are striving for, and he said, listen, at the end of the day, under the sun, without God in the picture, these things are just like striving after the wind. There's no profit there. There's nothing good there. And so we need to be mindful of making sure those things are in their proper place. Any other thoughts on the first 11 verses there by anyone? Any comments or thoughts on that, possessions or pleasures? We covered that pretty good? All right, let's go to the next section here. We're going to talk 12 through 17. This is where Solomon picks up this experiment, and now he's going to try to compare wisdom and folly. And Solomon writes in verse 12, so I turn to consider wisdom, madness, and folly. For what will the man do who will come after the king except what has already been done? And I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I know that the one fate befalls them both. Then I said to myself, as in the fate of fools, it will be to befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So I said to myself, this too is vanity. For there is no lasting remembrance of the wise man as with the fool, inasmuch as the coming days all will be forgotten, and how the wise man and the fool alike die. So I hated life, for the work which had been done under the sun was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. I meant to make the comment at the very beginning. Stay with me, because it doesn't end as bad as it is right here in these first few sections. We're going to have some positive. But here he talks about this idea of wisdom and folly, and he compares the two. And he says, I'm going to turn to wisdom. We know that this is a recurring theme, and we understand that's Solomon's life and what he was blessed by God. But he says, I'm going to look and see what the benefit of these are. And under the sun, there in verse 13, what does he conclude about wisdom and folly? What does he conclude? Wisdom is better. So even under the sun, even without God in the picture, wisdom excels folly. So tell me how that works. What does he compare it to there in that same verse? Like, it's not even a close contest, right? What does he give a comparison of? Light versus darkness. And so when in the Bible, when we see that, we usually look at good versus evil. And so there's a very strong contrast between light and darkness. And I believe that he's trying to show that wisdom excels folly in the same way. So how do we play that out? Absolutely. You're less likely to have bad consequences in your life to use some wisdom. And that typically comes with age. It doesn't have to, because when we think about Solomon as the wisest person to ever live, and Jesus, the only other one that's wiser than him, as we see on this earth, Jesus lived to be 33. Solomon probably lived to be in his 60s. So it wasn't about long life and age necessarily for wisdom being able to be implemented into life. But we see here that wisdom excels folly, because most of the time, the way of the transgressor is hard. And the one that's foolish is going to walk in a way that's in what? Darkness. But what does he say here in verse 14 and 15 when he really kind of analyzed this? What did he say was the great equalizer between the foolish man and the wise man? What's that?
Everybody dies.
Both die. Right? You know, it's just like, what do you do? Right? What do you do? So we understand that Solomon's telling us that wisdom excels folly, but at the end of that, the fate of the fool will also befall me. Why then have I been extremely wise? So the question to me and you is that, right? Why then be extremely wise if we're all going to die? How would you answer that to someone? I don't want to give all the answers. Absolutely. Those heard Maddie said, it's this idea of having eyes to see and being able to walk through life and be able to actually see what's happening. I think that's absolutely right. We look at Ephesians, it says walk circumspectly, right? It gives us this idea of being able to see what's around us and the wisdom that comes with that. Jane? Yeah, life is harder for the unwise man, the stupid man. Absolutely. Yep, that's right. And it makes life hard for you. What else? Anything else on that? Yes, sir, Bob.
He's judging all of this by the wrong universe. His universe ends at death. And what Christians know is the universe does not end at death. And yet, there could be some guy who's very wise and made all kinds of decisions, good financial decisions, everything.
Poverty.
somebody who's that smart, he didn't use it, and he sounded stupid.
I agree with that. I think, too, we got to, and I think you've made this point, remembering the scope of what he's doing here is that his experiment was life without God in it. And so this was, as it's noted here in verse 17, this red under the sun, that he absolutely was stupid because this experiment had no God in it. And so what does he say about life under the sun to Bob's point on all of this? In verse 17, he what about life? He what? Hated it. I hated life for this work. Because to one looking at it in that way, if we have the village idiot and the wise man being buried on the same day, it is a dreadful life. And you think this is just worthless. And I think that's the point he is making to get us to where we're going to go at the very end of this chapter and ultimately the end of the book. So let's move on to anybody else on this, because we're going to carry right over. And I think Bob did a great segue into the next section here where he talks about this idea of work. And so,
going back to a point you made sure. earlier, I think it's a good place to start mm-hmm. back.
That's right.
So when you put God and you put others in it, everything makes sense.
Absolutely.
To use the wisdom, to all the riches, all those things, when you're serving others with it, now it makes sense. But when it's all about you, then it's for nothing.
Absolutely. I think if you hear Jay said, if it's all about you, those pronouns there, the I's and the me's and the my's, really get us out. What word jumps off before I read this off the board? What word jumps out? Labor, work, right? So us, we a lot of times put a lot of our who we are, our identity, especially males, but females as well, can put their identity in what I do, right? I love Jeff, but he introduced me to his mom. He's smiling because he knows this. He said, this is my real estate agent. I looked at Jeff, I'm like, your real estate agent? I'm your friend that goes to church with you, that's a deacon with you in the church, and you're going to, you know, put me in the real estate agent. So I've gave him a lot of grief about that. But it is how we're identified, right? You're identified by what you do. And so what he's going to do is go explore this work. And we understand Solomon really didn't have to work, did he? Because we talked about the slaves earlier. But he says, let me go look at, is there any benefit in work, in labor? And he picks up in verse 18. He says, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun, for I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool, yet he will have control over all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore, I completely despaired of all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them, this too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all of his days his task is painful and grievous. Even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Who can relate to that last point there? How many of you have ever been up at night worried about your work? Absolutely, right? Just sleep evades you because you're worried about work. And so we go back here and you look at this and he talks about the fruit of his labor, which he labored under the sun, he must leave it to this man. And so we can go look, Solomon wrote as well, I think he probably wrote Proverbs 13:22 that says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. So Solomon wrote, hey, it's good. A good man does this, leaves an inheritance. And now he's saying what? The futility of leaving something to someone behind you. How do we make sense of that? I think two different points are being made, by the way, but how do you make sense of that?
You have no control over what they're going to do with what you earn.
You don't have any control over what they're going to do with what you earn. Was Solomon prophetic in this? Who was his son? Rehoboam. Remember Rehoboam? How long did it take Rehoboam to lose some of the kingdom? How quick? Month? 2 months? A year? How many tribes did he lose? 10 of the 12 are gone. Right? He left. He expanded the kingdom. He had it united. Solomon's gone. He leaves this to the fool, Rehoboam. I think I can safely say that about him. And within a year, he loses 10 tribes. Do you remember this? And I wrote this scripture down, and you can look back at it. We won't turn to it now, but it's in 2 Chronicles 12. 2 Chronicles 12 says that in the fifth year of Rehoboam, because he had not obeyed God, he had to go get gold from the temple and pay the king of Egypt. Go back and read that story. It's really interesting. You think 5 years later, think about all the wealth that Solomon had gathered. Remember, he said he had expanded this greater than anybody. Remember, the Queen of Sheba came. What did Queen of Sheba say? The what? The half hadn't even been told. But Solomon says the futility, and I don't know that he was able to see this ahead, but man, did this not play out in his life? He worked hard for this land. He worked hard for this kingdom. He worked hard for this gold. And within 5 years, he's now given this to the king of Egypt to keep him from taking over this kingdom. And so I think that's the point he's telling us, right? So back to some of the things Bob said. We have so much effort in our 401ks and our retirements. And what's going to happen when I'm gone? Hopefully Ella and Emma and Joseph will be wise in that. But what will I have to say in that? Not a thing. Some of y'all probably met my granddad. He died a couple years ago, 91 years old. Very special to us. But the day he died, me and my sister went back to his house and we're cleaning out his freezer. And he was born in 1928 before there was a thing such as sliced bread. So he lived in that era, 13 children on the farm. He had something, he died, I think, in 2019. He had something in his freezer from 2005. Point is this, we were throwing it out and we laughed and said my granddaddy would just drive him crazy. But at that point, he had no say-so in that. That's kind of a silly example, and we're talking about food in a freezer, but the point is that after death, we're leaving this behind, and so that doesn't need to be what drives our labor. And I think we spend so much time in that, and I can be guilty of this as anybody, that's what I'm spending my effort in. That's what's keeping me up at night. That's what I'm putting my time and energy in, is being able to do this. And he says that at the end of the day, how many times does he say, under the sun, it's vanity. You see it when you just glance up there. The labor's all vanity. And he says, for what does a man get? He gets sleepless nights. So what's your thoughts on that? Anything else to add on that labor? Nothing else on that? All right, so before we go to the great conclusion of the last part of this chapter. Yes, sir, Matt. Absolutely. Excellent point there. Anything else on that? Anybody else? I don't want to cut off any comments on that.
I wonder if maybe somewhere in his mind he's thinking about the temple that he built and all the labor that went into that and what's going to happen to that. Mm-hmm. You know, if the nation of Israel doesn't unite and enjoy the blessings of being obedient to God, what's going to happen to this temple? All the labor and all the work that we put into it. And obviously it was destroyed once captivity came, but still I wonder if he had that in his mind too.
Do you remember when they came back from captivity, some of those that had seen Solomon, what did they do? Do you remember?
They wept,
right? And that'll come up again in our study. So summing up these first 23 verses of chapter 2, if I'm going to kind of try to take a New Testament principle or verse or something Jesus said and say, okay, how do I apply it to this? I wrote down Matthew 16, verse 26, and it says this, "For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" I think that is such a fitting verse that Jesus taught that really ties these verses into everything that we pursue. Let's say that we do have the greatest possessions, the greatest pleasure, wisdom, labor. We have a great job, make all this money, save for retirement to leave. But he says, if you compare that, you gain the whole world, which is not really possible. But if you gain the whole world and forfeit your soul, what does it profit you? And there's nothing we can give in exchange to that. And Jay made this point as well. I wrote down Matthew 20, verse 26, is the idea that we must, in order for us to be great in the kingdom, we do that through serving others. And so greatness amongst God's people is not found in the I's, my's, myself, me, but it's in the idea of we and us and what can I do to serve. And that's a challenge here. And we see that Solomon in his exploration that he went through, he lived this and he wrote this down for us, but it was all about himself and it wasn't about others. You didn't think you were going to come to Bible class and get a Jim Carrey quote, but I want to give you a Jim Carrey quote. Y'all know Jim Carrey, the actor? He wrote this, and this one's, I heard this several years ago, and it's always been very poignant to me. I think it really fits here. He says, "I wish everyone could get rich and famous and have everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer." And that's really fitting for someone coming from Hollywood, coming from what we would say has everything this life has to offer, if you will, from a fame standpoint, a riches standpoint. And he says, look, I wish everybody could taste this. And I don't know what Jim Carrey believes. I don't think he's probably faithful in the way that we would think in any way, shape, or form. But he is someone who lived this life in a small way like Solomon did. And he said, look, it's not the answer. There's emptiness. And we can look at Hollywood. We can look at these people that have great fame and fortune and understand that they are some of the most miserable people. So I heard last week, I'm 42, and Elvis died when he was 42. He would have been 80, I think, this week or 80-something. And I think about someone like him that searched fulfillment through drugs, alcohol, all of those things, and a life cut short, and how sad that is. So let's move on to the conclusion because we have a few more minutes. And I think this is where hopefully we can end on a positive note. Verse 24 says this in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, 24. It says, "There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen that is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind." I told you last week there's going to be some recommendations, and we actually pointed to this when it's kind of grayed out here in verse 24. And I've got it right in mind, my Bible here. It's R number 1 by 24. So I encourage you, if you don't mark in your Bible, that's fine, but make a note in your phone of recommendations that Solomon gives you and write down Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24. Because in the next 2 or 3 months, there's going to be a time, it may be sooner, there's going to be a time where you're like, life stinks right now. I don't like my job. I don't like anything that's going on right now. I find no joy. Everything's a drag. So what can I learn? What can I glean? And I want you to be able to go back and look at Ecclesiastes and say, what are some things Solomon told me when he's looking at this life under the sun, this vanity-stricken life? What can I glean from that to pull away? And Ecclesiastes 2:24 is one of those. He says this, "For there's nothing better for man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good." That's something you and I can do every day, by the way. I get up every morning, and I'm blessed to be able to drink coffee. Every morning, I love coffee. And every morning when I drink coffee, I should just take a moment and say, God, thank you this morning for coffee. Right? My food. Y'all, you probably don't know this by looking at me, but I like to eat. We're Southern. And we usually say, what, thanks before we eat. We need to say thanks after we eat as well. What? And he says, these are, to me, eating and drinking is some of the basic necessities of life. He gets right down to basic necessities that most of us do that every day. And he says to tell yourself that the labor is good. How would you classify that statement? I'm not asking that question very well. I guess I can just tell you what I'm thinking. That's a choice. That's a choice to tell yourself that your labor is good. Do you ever get up and you don't feel like going to work?
No.
No, that doesn't happen to Jimmy. It's not Jimmy. No. Do you ever think that, hey, I don't feel real good, I don't really want to do anything today? That's a pretty common, can be a common occurrence. But we have to choose to tell ourselves that we've been blessed by God. Because what does he say at the end of the verse? He said, I have seen that this is from the hand of God. This is one of the few times before we get to chapter 12 that Solomon references God. Back to some of Bob's point, he's finally making sense of everything he's done all in chapter 2, his life. This is a guy, remember, we believe at the end of his life, reflecting back. And he says, I spent all this time and effort through all these things. And there's these times that I probably should have stopped and been thankful for my food, my drink, my labor. Bob?
You're really talking about satisfaction versus not satisfaction. Mm-hmm. You're talking about you're satisfied with your cup of coffee and your eggs and grits. You're lucky enough to have grits. But then you and Stacy can identify with this, probably can swap stories about this. The person that comes to you and says, I want my dream home. Mm-hmm. And I have found it. It's $1.6 million. It's over here in this hotshot subdivision. And now when I get that, I'm going to be totally satisfied. And they get in there, and you hear that 6 months later, they've decided to add another pool. They've decided to add another wing. They've decided to add a waterfall. This was the dream home that they were going to be satisfied with over everything. And now that they're sitting in there in this $1.6 million home, looking out this fantastic picture window at the wonderful garden, well, there's something missing. I'm still not satisfied. And that's the difference between what you're saying mm-hmm. that the Christian has and this other person who keeps wanting more and more and more. Are you choosing to be satisfied?
Absolute contentment. And Bob, that's going to be something we pick up in 2 weeks in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 a lot, because he talks about God has set eternity in our hearts. There's a specific hole in all of us that's only filled by God. It's only filled by contentment, understanding that God can fill that hole. And that's what Ecclesiastes really is about, that so many people are searching for that through the $1.6 million house, the waterfall, the wing, the extra pool, and that those things, back to that example, those things can be enjoyable if we understand that's not ultimately going to be my fulfillment. These are blessings of God. These are things from His hand. Because go down to verse 26. This is what I want you to take away this week. With you and me too. He says, for the person who is good in his sight, this is God, it should be circled, he has given him wisdom, knowledge, and joy. Those are three things that you and I can, through our lives this week, implement. We can be wise in the things that we do. We can have knowledge of who God is. Knowledge is this, what we know versus what we feel. Back to that choice, we have to go to what we know, not what we feel. And then to find that joy. And this is where, as a Christian, we can look at all the labor, all the issues of life, and we can put it in that proper context. And we can learn from Solomon's experiment that he tried everything else. So therefore, we don't have to go find the emptiness in that. I look forward to 2 weeks. Lord willing, next week we'll be with Billy Randolph in our meeting. 2 weeks, we'll pick up chapter 3, which is probably the most famous chapter in Ecclesiastes, and look forward to doing that with you then.